This is the Diehards. The Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
It is hour number two of the Diehards SB Nation Radio. Anthony Pepe with my lone friend tonight, Matt McCarthy, from 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We have some other people in the Pepe compound, though.
Yeah. We have like a live studio audience tonight checking us out. Mr. Rob Giglio and Mike D, our pals, hanging out, watching.
Nothing better to do on a Friday night, apparently.
What the hell are we doing? What are they doing, this radio show? What? Why are we here? This is so stupid. Anyway, I'd like to say hello to the Penza family listening in Cape Cod. And speaking of Cape Cod, you're from Cape Cod. You called Cape Cod League games. Do you miss it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, who doesn't miss sports in the summer? And listen, if you're, you know,
calling that a special.
Oh, it's great. You know, you see big leaguers every single night. You know, it's one of the cool experiences of my broadcasting career, getting to call Cape League games. Again, I saw Aaron Judge before he was big. You know, like, I think in anything in life, Pep, like, if you're a music fan and you see a big music act when they're opening up and nobody knows, and you're like, wow, I saw, you know, that group when. I mean, whatever group you want to mention. Like, I saw U2 as an opening act in 1979 or something like that. There are people out there, and they'll tell you about it for the rest of their lives. Like, and if you're a sports fan.
Are you a U2 fan, by the way?
I am a U2 fan.
That Rattle and Hum and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, all that stuff. You know.
I digress. Go ahead.
But, you know, if you're a sports fan and you see, oh, I saw that guy play in college, or, oh, I saw that guy play in the minor leagues, that's one
of
the cool
things. Oh, my God, I used to listen to Anthony Pepe on 1510 in Boston. Now he's national.
Yeah, he's huge.
Boom!
He's gone big, baby. He's gone big.
Right?
Stuff like that. You know the feeling. Hey, you know, it applies to anything in life.
By the way, what is banking in NASCAR?
Banking. I'm going to say that involves something to do with the wall. It involves crashing into the wall somehow.
The slope of a racetrack, specifically at a curve or a corner. The angle of degree of banking refers to the height of the racetrack slope at the outside edge versus the inside edge. You get all that?
I didn't do so well with that.
Mercy,
one. I did well with the dirty air, you know, dirty person here. I didn't do so well with that one.
Sports professor Rick Horro joins us next. You keep it right here. It's SB Nation Radio.
You're back with the Diehards. The Diehards. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Time now to go to the phones and visit with the sports professor himself, Rick Horro.
He sounds like a smart man.
Now let's go to the Progressive guest line. Make it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Friend of the show, the sports professor, Mr. Rick Horro in Florida. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you? Everything okay?
Everything's all right here, man. Say hello to my co-host tonight from 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, Matt McCarthy, friend of mine. He's a pretty good sportscaster. He was on Comcast today on Felger and Maz. They have like a 19 share, but blah, blah. He's now in the major leagues, obviously, with us. So say hello to Matt.
Wow. Hello to Matt. How are you?
How you doing, Rick?
Good. Is this an audition? You bring people in to replace you now on a regular basis? Is that part of your contract?
I'm just bringing friends in to just pal with me and talk sports. It's how it is. It's the show's called The Diehards. It's how I roll.
No, I understand. And I'm just, you know, you are an institution in your own mind. So congratulations.
I appreciate that, Rick. Hey, I'm curious, and I don't want to mention those call letters that are Matt McCarthy's arch nemesis here in Boston. But the flagship of the Boston Red Sox radio station, if games happen, and this season happens, 60, 65, 70 games. Is that radio contract prorated? How does that work?
Well, all of these contracts are prorated, but they're also negotiable. So, you know, the Fox deal is $1.7 billion, the TV deal. That's the big kahuna, the national one. And then every regional one, obviously, Nesson and otherwise have different regional circumstances. I can guarantee you nobody had in his contract the coronavirus pandemic as it relates to how to deal with it. But act of God, and there are issues, and these are unforeseen circumstances. So everybody's got to work together. And frankly, assuming a deal gets done from the top down, it's going to make it easier for everybody, concessionaires, ballpark operators, opening the ballpark, the radio people, the TV people. You know, all of my friends in the industry are now saying, are we going to call games remote? Are they going to bring us on road trips? I mean, all you guys have the same kind of situations, and everybody does. You know, even on the NBA side, it is a weird time of year. Have we figured out yet, by the way, shifting gears for a second, what home court advantage means in the NBA if you're all playing on the same court? Do you get to pick the team hotel? Is that the way it's going to work? Do you avoid the character hotel with 6-foot ceilings? How about that? I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen here.
I know what you're saying.
It's a great point. And there are so many things to figure out in this unprecedented time, Rick. And, you know, I guess looking forward, all right, you know, because I think we all want to get out of this 2020 mindset. Let's talk 2022, 2023. How does something like this affect things moving forward? Like Pepe was just talking about radio rights. Like, think about how much money is tied in television and radio contracts and broadcasting. Like, are we going to see, is this going to affect sports for years to come, just in regards to the financial aspects of the game? Because, you know, if these teams don't bring in as much money as they thought in their local television rights or local radio rights or something like that, like, is this going to affect these sports for years to come? You know better than I. You tell me.
Yeah, well, the years to come is interesting, and I'm really glad you fixed on 2022, because baseball, as compared to the other sports, has a much more solid financial future because of the TV deal that's been negotiated with Fox and ESPN and TBS and their playoff deals and, you know, the extension and the 63% increase over the prior deal. So my thought over the last month was just get out of each other's way, get to 2022, and the revenue comes back like that V-shaped curve, regardless of what's going to happen in 2021, and we still don't know about that yet. So baseball's in pretty good shape if they just get out of each other's way.
Is baseball too reliant on those television deals, though? Because, I mean, that's where the money's coming from, you know, in the game, right? I mean, there are a lot of teams that aren't really putting, you know, fans in the seats at this time in baseball. Like, are they heavily reliant on those, particularly regional sports networks, which is where all the absurd money comes from in baseball, it seems?
Well, you know, are we too reliant as an industry on another industry that pays a really significant guarantee regardless of team performance? Well, yeah, but that's not a bad thing. So, you know, we could make fans younger, therefore the next generation are going to come. We can make them buy more concessions. We can try to do luxury boxes again with new stadiums. All that stuff is really important, but television is big. And the biggest problem we have kind of structurally with the regional stuff, as we know, with the Red Sox payroll, largely because of Nesson as well, and the Yankee payroll much bigger because of the New York cable deal, same in L.A., same in Chicago, is a disparity. You know, I mean, we all understand with the NFL, Green Bay wouldn't be Green Bay without the equal sharing of all revenue from the television side. Baseball's a lot different. That is why the Billy Beans of the world, it's a great movie. By the way, I saw Moneyball about 13 times during the pandemic. It beats watching the fifth rerun of Beverly Hills, Beverly Hillbillies. You know, the guy shoots the water, he finds oil, he goes to L.A., Jethro tries out, he throws a fastball through the tree, and that's enough of that, okay? But so the bottom line of all of this is we get to understand that the baseball situation is largely television-driven, and you can be less good managing a team that has a whole lot of money coming in.
Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new home quote explorer, only at progressive.com. On the Progressive guest line, the sports professor, friend of the show, the sports guru, Mr. Rick Horro, is on with the diehards, SB Nation Radio. It's Anthony Pepe and Matt McCarthy from 98.5, the sports hub here in Boston. Hey, Rick, I know you don't have any, like, analytical data on this next question, but I'm just curious to get your opinion. Sports gambling, when sports return, will there be more sports gambling as people are jonesing to gamble on their favorite team or their favorite sport or just gamble in general? Or because of the economic times and maybe money's tight, there'll be less gambling? Where do you think the money's going to be, up or down?
What are you talking about? I spent most of the day today betting on every shot with my buddies virtually at the Colonial, right?
But you're a high roller, though, so that's how you
roll.
Yeah,
high roller.
But I'm talking the general public that makes you know, nominal salaries.
The jamokes like us.
High roller,
come on.
Low roller. I don't pay my bets anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I do think at the end of the day, you've got people who are not addicted, but they're jonesing. That's a very good point. And I do think that people are going to continue to gamble. They miss it. And let's just hope, I know it sounds like a liquor ad, let's just hope they gamble responsibly. And, you know, one of the big issues has always been people gambling above their means.
Sure.
But, again, one of the things that's going to happen, and I've been saying this all over the country this week, who'd have thunk it a few weeks ago that we'd have a problem of having too many sports on prime time starting July, August, September? And the only good thing about that is, by the way, that advertisers are now going to be a little bit diluted. They have to make some choices if you have one of the big sports they're advertising competing against another one. But a lot of the networks have not had the time or the ability to have the primetime comedies and dramas with the big actors and actresses shot for primetime this year. So what are you going to do in September? Sports, more sports, all sports, morning, noon, evening, afternoon. It's a beautiful country.
Yeah, except the problem is baseball might not be one of those sports, at least based on some of the negotiations. First and foremost, Rick, let me ask you, I mean, do you think baseball is coming back, yes or no, based on these negotiations? And what have you made of these negotiations? I mean, in my very...
Did you just say what have?
Exactly. Right. In my very... uneducated opinion, it seems like the owners continue to... wrap this up differently. They keep changing the wrapping paper on this, and it seems to be kind of the same financial proposal that they keep making in just a number of different forms. What do you make of this whole thing?
Listen. Just remember this: uneducated is a relative comparison. You are there with Pepe, so just be really careful. So you know, count your blessings. It is a different wrapping. It's a different wrapping, but again, it's all about money. And it's not just semantics, but too often that drives negotiations. Is it a guarantee? Is it a prorated based on salary? It would have been easy just to say, put it all in a pot, divide it equally. But then you say, well, the cost of opening your office, meaning the stadium, is high. So do you take that off the top? Do you take the marketing off the top? And then do you share equally? Well, that means that the salaries aren't as high as they would have been. And you promised us guaranteed salaries. Well, if I promised you something in March, it's a lot different than post-pandemic promising you something in June. So we've all got to get together and deal with it. I think they're close enough now with enough lead time where we have about a week. It could happen in a day. We have about a week or maybe a little longer to get this done. We need a BC, a back channel closer that nobody knows to bang some heads in the back room, and I think we're almost there.
Rick Horrell, final question here. We got about 2 minutes left. When sports return, and let's just say for argument's sake, they all return, or most of them return, and there are no fans in the stands, are these teams and these marketing teams and sales teams, are they going to look for other creative ways to bring in revenue streams? Are we going to see logos on uniforms that we don't normally see, and signage in locations that we normally don't see, to try to bring in some of that money that they're not going to get from ticket sales?
Oh, yeah, and college football is going to start naming their stadiums after corporations and bringing in more alcohol sales to college athletes over 21 in stadiums, and on. Any way you can do it to raise money. We're going to have a lot more interactivity, by the way, between fans at home who would love to go but can't because of public health, and fans in stadiums or stadiums themselves. And look for in the next couple of years things that television networks will do to make it look like a stadium experience. The line between going to a game and sitting on your butt is going to be a lot less significant. So I do think we're going to see a lot of interesting stuff in the next couple of years, largely because of the pandemic.
Hey, Rick, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next week. Don't play too much golf this weekend and tire yourself out, okay?
Yeah, sorry about that, but I am going to play no matter what you say, so I'll talk to you next week.
All right, there he is, the sports professor, Rick Horrell, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. He is Matt McCarthy from 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. I'm Anthony Pepe. Coming up next, Super Bowl 36 champion, formerly of the New England Patriots and Cleveland Browns, Marty Moore, going to join the diehards next. You keep it right here. It's SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to the Diehards on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
We are live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios East here in Boston. About 20 minutes south of Boston, about 20 minutes south of, or 20 minutes, I should say, away from Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. And speaking of O'Reilly, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it to you curbside. What's better than that, Mr. Matt McCarthy?
Nothing better, especially in this time when I don't want to see people or go anywhere.
There you go. Or you could choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I mentioned Gillette Stadium, our next guest on the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Former New England Patriot and Cleveland Brown and Super Bowl 36 champion, Mr. Irrelevant, Marty Moore's on the line. Hey, Marty, welcome to SB Nation Radio. It's Anthony and Matt. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you doing tonight?
We're doing all right, man. We appreciate you taking the time. So, do you like that Mr. Irrelevant, or are you kind of over that?
You know what? It's been a great thing for my career.
All right.
When I was in Boston, everybody knew me by Mr. Irrelevant. They kind of screwed it up every once in a while and called me Mr. Insignificant. But as far as my career went, you know, I had a lot of firsts with the Mr. Irrelevant. You know, being the last pick, but I was the only guy to start as a rookie. I started opening day versus Miami in Miami, and then to play in the Super Bowl and, you know, just kind of different things throughout my career. So it's kind of been a good thing for me being the last guy drafted and being able to be the first to do a lot of things as a Mr. Irrelevant.
Last guy drafted, and you are a Super Bowl champion. I'm curious to get your take on again, it was Super Bowl 36 in New Orleans, Louisiana Superdome. What was that feeling like when you guys won the game, 14-point underdogs against the St. Louis Rams and the greatest show on turf? I was actually there at that game, so we have a lot in common, Marty. I'm called Mr. Irrelevant in my life today, but I'm curious to get your feeling. You know, as a Patriot fan growing up, it was the greatest feeling in the world for me. But as a player, what were you feeling when you finally won that Super Bowl and all your hard work, your whole life playing football? You won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know, that was an interesting one for me because I played in 31, and then in 36, I actually tore my Achilles in half, and I was watching the game in the Superdome with everybody on the injured reserve.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but I will say that was a magical year. You know, that was the year that Brady came in,
yep.
And, you know, I was on the sideline when Drew got hit. And he landed at my feet, and I was like, he's out, he's done. And so when Brady came in, everyone was like, oh, no, what's going to happen, you know. And Coach Belichick knew a little bit more than we did. So, you know, Tom came in, and he did a great job and got us to the Super Bowl. And, you know, that was just – it was a magical year because that was 9/11, you know. And
yeah,
a lot of people don't understand that, but that was 9/11. And, you know, the Patriots are going to the Super Bowl, and everything was red, white, and blue. And I remember being in Boston and the flags flying off the cranes. And, you know, just the whole – we felt like the whole nation was behind us to win that game, just being that, you know, it was just a special moment in history, you know, being that it was 9/11 and there was so much patriotism going on across the country.
Marty, you know, it's interesting. There's so many things I want to ask you about that season because I think it's one of the most compelling seasons, really, in recent NFL memory. But you said you were on the sideline and you were basically right there when Drew Bledsoe got hit, a hit that changes the course of the NFL forever. I've heard so many people say, like, when you ask them about that hit, they talk about the sound. And I can still remember hearing that sound watching that game. Was the sound, is that what you remember the most about it? Because, I mean, it seems like everybody always says the sound, the sound, the sound.
Well, you know, I was watching the whole play. So I see Bledsoe rolling out, and I see Mo Lewis, and Mo was about a 260-pound outside linebacker, and he was running full speed. And so as Drew was trying to get out of bounds, he kind of raised up about 2 yards from the sideline. And we were kind of like, get down. And, I mean, in my mind, I was going, get down, get out of bounds, do something. And when he hit him, it literally, Drew was knocked out immediately. And he just, it literally, I thought, man, this he must be dead. I mean, Mo hit him that hard, and he just rolled up into a ball like a baby. And Drew's a 6'5", 235-pound quarterback. He's not a small guy. And I remember calling Ron O'Neill, the trainer, over immediately. They came over, and, you know, Drew lost, I don't know how many liters of blood that night. They had to put a chest tube in him, and he took about, I think it was 8 or 9 weeks before he came back to play that season. And, you know, when he came back, everyone was like, you know, he shouldn't lose his job, because that's kind of how it works in the NFL, is you don't ever lose your job. But Tom was playing so well, and we were on a roll. You know, Belichick, him and Parcells, they're kind of superstitious coaches. Every coach is. I think they all have their things. But, you know, we get to the playoffs, and then Brady got hurt. And Drew has to win the game against the Steelers so we can, you know, advance and get to the Super Bowl. So, you know, it was kind of, you know, one of those where when he came back, we were glad he came back. But, you know, Tom was playing so well, but then Drew came in, we won a game, and then Brady, you know, won the Super Bowl for us. But Drew was, you know, people understand, I mean, he played 15 years in the league, was all pro. I mean, he was a great quarterback, and, you know, had a great career. It's just, you know, when you're competing against a guy who quite arguably could be the best quarterback to ever play the game, it, you know, you kind of tip your hat and say, I'm going to go make another team, help another team win some games, and that's what Drew did. And you know, he was a very good teammate, and I think he handled himself very well with the Patriots and that season and what went on.
Do you think people have forgotten what an upset that was, because the Patriots won 5 Super Bowls after that? I mean, it seems like people have forgotten what an underdog victory that was.
You got two touchdown underdogs, 14 points,
14-point underdogs.
We got 2 minutes.
Listen, we went into that game, and there was no chance. No one gave us any chance at all. And you know, the biggest thing that I feel the Rams did was March was just, I'm going to outthink Belichick, right? I mean, you know, everyone's always trying to kind of outthink Coach Belichick. And I think March got in there, and he was doing all these shifts and movements, and he took his team completely out of the game. And then when the second half came and he finally figured out that all he had to do was just play St. Louis Rams football and they were going to win, we were already up. We were already up 2 scores. So, you know, when they rolled back and tied the game on us, I really think in Coach Belichick's mind was like, if we don't win the game now, we're not going to win this game.
Hey, Marty,
and that's why we...
Marty, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're up against the clock here. We've got about a minute left. What are you working on nowadays? What are you doing?
So right now, I work for the NFL. I work with former players, helping them transition from the NFL to a job.
Awesome.
I manage the state of Kentucky for an orthopedic spine company. So I'm in the operating room every day doing spinal fusions and decompressions and just kind of helping surgeons. I make sure they have what they need, and I coach high school football. So
awesome. My
son is going to be a junior, and I'm coaching his team and trying to win a state title, and hopefully we'll do that this year.
Hey, Marty, appreciate the time. Keep busy, stay safe with your family, and we'd love to talk to you when football starts later on down the line. Okay, buddy?
Hey, give me a call anytime. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marty.
He is, former Patriot, former Brown, Super Bowl champ, Mr. Irrelevant, Marty Moore on the Progressive Guest Line. Another T.O. timeout. When we come back, we're talking NASCAR matches with Matt McCarthy from the Sports Hub.
You know I know it.
The Diehards continue now on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
It's the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios East here in Boston, Massachusetts. Anthony Pepe and my friend tonight is Matt McCarthy from 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. Hey, Matt, we're doing NASCAR terms throughout the program, so I'm curious. You obviously know what happy hour is, right?
Oh, yes, definitely.
So what is it in NASCAR? Because I know you know what the happy hour is, the other happy hour.
Oh, we're already going to take advantage. We'll take advantage after the program, too. Happy hour in NASCAR. I'm going to say it's the hour before the race.
No, you're close, man, close. It's the last practice session held before the NASCAR race.
I've been close on two out of three.
You're close about these NASCAR matches, called it earlier.
I'm all up on the NASCAR.
But the guy who is all up on the NASCAR is joining us on the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. He is a friend of the show. We had him on before from Fox Sports. Covers NASCAR. Bob Packers is on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to SB Nation Radio. It's Anthony and Matt. How are you?
Doing good, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing all right, man. We're just so where are you located again?
Me? My home is New York City.
Oh, you're in New York. Okay, so you and your family staying safe?
Yes, sir.
All right. Good stuff, man. Good stuff. We appreciate you taking the time. So, obviously, the big news in NASCAR and in the sports world right now is Bubba Wallace coming out saying that the NASCAR should ban the Confederate flag. NASCAR, came out with a statement the other day that said no Confederate flags are allowed in the stadium. Just curious to get your overall take and reaction on what's happening with NASCAR and the Confederate flag.
Well, you really have to go back 4 or 5 years ago when NASCAR tried this program where they said, hey, if you have a Confederate flag up or if you have a Confederate flag, we'll trade you a U.S. flag or a driver flag for it. And the result was boxes and boxes of U.S. flags and driver flags that the tracks just had because nobody was willing to trade for them. You know, they maybe trade 3 or 4 weekends. So, you know, they tried. But people weren't just going to give them up. Now, you fast forward to last Sunday at Atlanta when the drivers come out and say, we're going to advocate for change when it comes to racial inequality and racism. And NASCAR President Steve Phelps comes out and says the same. Then the following day, Bubba Wallace says, well, NASCAR needs to get rid of the Confederate flag. NASCAR had no choice, right? They had to act, because if they had not acted, their words on Sunday would have been hollow.
Hey, what's been the fan reaction to all this?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of fan reaction. There's some that are supportive, but there certainly are some who are saying, I'm not watching NASCAR again, or, we're going to still try to fly our flags, or we're not going to come to races.
Okay.
Certainly it's a issue that has a lot of passion on both sides.
How much research has NASCAR put into this? You know, you look at the NFL and the statement that Roger Goodell made, and now all of a sudden you're starting to get more polling out showing that maybe the general public is more supportive of players who kneel than it was 3 or 4 years ago. You know, did NASCAR, do polling on this? Did they do research on this? How much thought went into this decision, and was it just a reaction to, what Bubba Wallace and what, some other drivers said? Like, how much went into this decision?
Well, I don't know if NASCAR did any polling, but what I do know is that most of the tracks were owned by public companies up till last year, and for 10 straight years, their ticket revenue went down. So I don't know how much polling you need to do if your ticket revenue is going down when you have and you've had the Confederate flag. Now, I'm not saying it's going down because you do, but obviously, if you were, how many more fans are going to be leaving, right? Mm-hmm. In some ways, if you're already struggling to keep fans, how much more is this step actually going to do? And I think that they most likely believe that whatever fans they do lose, that they'll gain new fans because that they're doing the right thing and they're doing something that hopefully makes more people feel comfortable to come to the racetrack and watch.
Quote, buy, and save on home insurance with Progressive's new home quote. Explorer only at Progressive.com. On the Progressive guest line, he covers NASCAR for Fox Sports. Bob Pockrass is on the line, SB Nation Radio. It's Anthony Pepe and Matt McCarthy from 98.5 The Sports Hub. We are in Boston. And any drivers or crew reactions from a negative standpoint, Bob?
There was one driver from the truck series. He's a kind of part-time driver and owns a truck, and he said that he's pretty much quitting, that he's going to sell all his stuff.
Boo-hoo.
And he, you know, I mean, but he was already thinking about quitting after this season. So you've had that. And, you know, I would say most of the drivers have been fairly supportive. You know, I think most of them still, you know, don't want to do things that alienate their fan base. And so I think, you know, they've been, some have said, well, you know, we it's NASCAR's decision and we'll support them either way. You know, but, I think that there's certainly many who are happy about it. And team wise, I think the teams are happy about it because when they try to sell sponsorship and they bring people to the racetrack, it's a question that they have to answer every week. You know, if people see that flag, you know, that people, you know, sponsor, you know, people who are making decisions on whether to sponsor race teams see that and probably second guess themselves.
Hey, Bob, can you talk a little bit about Bubba Wallace? Again, for maybe sports fans that are listening to this program that don't follow NASCAR or don't follow it, you know, to a T like you do, or NASCAR fans, what's Bubba Wallace all about? Who is he? We know he's the only African-American in the sport, but can you give us a little insight, a little background of Bubba Wallace?
Yeah, so Bubba Wallace was born in Mobile, Alabama. His mother ran track at, I want to say, the University of Tennessee. And, but he moved to North Carolina at a fairly young age and has been racing in North Carolina, you know, ever since he was a kid. He's been racing against guys like Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott for years before, you know, getting into NASCAR. He was part of, NASCAR's diversity program, I want to say. He drove for Kyle Busch for a while there in the trucks, won some truck races. And then drove for Roush Fenway in the Xfinity Series, and then has been with Richard Petty Motorsports the last few years in Cup.
Bob, you know, we're on across the country here, and you know we're on in stations in the South and the North and the West. Mm-hmm. I'll just say, you know, we're doing this show from Boston. All right, so mm-hmm. what do I truly know about, you know, the Confederate flag and you know what it means in the South? Right, I guess.
Well, you don't even know what happy hour means in NASCAR. So
well, exactly. So clearly, I'm not the guy. I guess explain this to me, because it's hard for somebody, you know, who's lived my life the way I've lived it up here to understand why this is still an issue in 2020, why the Confederate flag is still an issue in 2020, and I fully acknowledge that that's probably my worldview living in the Northeast. But I find it completely ridiculous that we're talking about it now, but it's probably not completely ridiculous that we're talking about it now in so many parts of the country.
Well, I mean, if you Googled Rebel 500, and you would come up with the names of races, mm-hmm. you know, that NASCAR had, in 20, 30, 40 years ago. NASCAR's roots are in the South, and there are plenty of photos of drivers in victory lane with the Confederate flag. And so the NASCAR culture and the Southern culture are very, you know, are very intertwined, right? And so people have been flying the Confederate flag at NASCAR mm-hmm. races. You know, there are people who go camp in the same spot every year and have probably been flying it for 20 or 30 years, you know. And so for them, it is part of their culture, and they want to be able to fly it.
How many people, though, like, would you say at the average NASCAR event? Listen, you know, I can only go off of the stereotypes that I know.
Again, event, it's not a match.
Exactly, okay. Event, exactly. How many people, you know, would you say if you go out into the parking lot before a NASCAR event, like, how many people would you say, what's the percentage here? And again, I've never been to a NASCAR race, so you tell me.
I would say, I mean, it obviously depends where you are. But like, you know, Daytona, Talladega, I would say that you would see probably at least a few dozen in the infield during a race weekend.
Okay. Bob, it's interesting because in taking a step further what Matt's talking about, so he's never been to a race. I started working for a radio station, almost 18 years ago. The general manager at the time ran a sports radio station in Charlotte, North Carolina, Sports WFNZ, I believe it was. And he came up here and launched a sports station in Boston to go after the only sports station in the town. And we aired NASCAR. And everyone was like, are you crazy? What are you talking about? And I remember he brought me over as the marketing director, and I had to market NASCAR. And I'm going, what are you talking about? What is this? As I'm joking with my pal here, NASCAR matches. What is this? I learned NASCAR. I actually started watching it for the first time. I enjoyed it. I had a favorite driver in Harvick. I went up to Loudon a couple times in New Hampshire. Believe it or not, they have two races. They had two races in New Hampshire, but yet New Englanders know nothing about NASCAR, yet there were two races here every year, which is crazy. Why isn't NASCAR more popular in New England? What is the deal with New England where people just, sports fans love their hockey, basketball, football, baseball, but it just seems like it never took that next step in New England? What do you think the reason is?
I'm not sure. You know, they do like their kind of their, what's called modified racing up there. And you've got kind of a passionate fan base, but may not be as big a fan base, obviously, as the stick and ball sports. I think it probably comes down to the love of the automobile, right?
Okay.
And I mean, that would be my guess, is that, you know, if you don't grow up wanting a car, right? If you're used to public transportation and a car is more a means to, or if a car is just more a means to get from one place to another rather than being celebrated, that probably has something to do with it.
You know, it's interesting. Could this ban of the Confederate flag be a way for NASCAR to make inroads in other parts of the country, you know, like the Northeast, if that isn't as much a part of the culture? Because I do think, Pep, up here, you know, in the Northeast, there's kind of a culture, I'm not going to watch
you,
that.
You have Roush Fenway, the owners of Fenway Park, and what they do.
That's
here
just a business investment for them. That's how people up here look at it. So, Bob, I'd be curious to get your thoughts. You know, banning the Confederate flag and kind of moving away from that culture, will that eventually help NASCAR make inroads in places like the Northeast and places north of the Mason-Dixon line?
We have about 2 minutes here.
Yeah, I think it can. I'm not going to say that it will.
All right.
But there certainly have been people I've got more DMs in the last couple of days of like, hey, I watched this race because I heard about it. Can you tell me about this or that? You know, so I think it certainly has created some interest among people who haven't necessarily had an interest in the sport, you know, whether NASCAR is successful in creating new fans. You know, I think we'll wait and see. Sometimes it can be a complicated sport to understand, and sometimes people just see it as turning left. But I like to say that it's kind of a soap opera that in some ways is masquerades as a sport, in the sense that, you know, yes, we talk about competition, but it's all about, you know, who hates who and who wants to wreck who and who's driving for their job. And then you have these whole, you know, teammates who kind of are supposed to help each other, but not really help each other. And so you have all these different dynamics that people can get into, but it just takes a little bit of time to understand them.
Final 30 seconds here on the most important question of the interview tonight, Bob, in our conversation. Should the Dukes of Hazzard be on the air right now in a network? Can't they just, in today's day and age, digitally remaster and cover over the Confederate flag on the General League? Can't they make that happen and put Bo Duke, Lou Duke, and Daisy, and Uncle Jesse, and Roscoe Pete Coltrane, and Flash, his dog, back on the air? Can't they do that?
Well, I mean, didn't Bubba Watson, didn't he have the car and paint over it already?
Oh, yeah, so I heard that. Yeah, he did.
You know, like four, five, 6 years ago. So I guess maybe they could do it. But, you know, I mean, I think that there's something to be, I mean, you don't want to totally erase history in the sense of that you don't want people talking about something and saying what is that, right? I mean, yeah. I don't know what's good about I don't know that you need to erase everything, but I think it's important to evolve. And the Confederate flag ban isn't about erasing people's history. It's about making people more comfortable.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time. You be safe with you and your family in New York, and keep up the good work with Fox Sports covering NASCAR. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you later on down the line. Okay, buddy?
All right, thank you.
There he is, Bob Pockris, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Final TO. We'll come back and wrap things up. He's Matt McCarthy from the Sports Hub in Boston. I'm Anthony Pepe. It's SB Nation Radio.
This is the Diehards on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
All right, Matt McCarthy, my friend tonight from 98.5 The Sports Hub. Quickly, before we let you go, short track, what is it?
Short track, that means 200, 300 laps, or a smaller racetrack.
You got it, man.
How about that?
You got it.
How about that?
NASCAR race trucks that are less than 1 mile long. What's a super speedway?
It's Talladega. It's the big ones.
It's a NASCAR racetrack that is more than 2 miles long. See, again,
I'm
educating you, man.
I'm an expert.
Hey,
this is why you have me on the show.
Keep up the great work on 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're doing a fantastic job, man. I'm proud of you, and just you keep doing what you're doing, okay, buddy? Keep grinding.
It's been real. Thanks to you. Thanks to Andrew.
Andrew Carlson running Rock and Roll Control in Houston. Great job, as always. The great Tony Bruno comes up next. We'll be back next Thursday night. Thanks so much for listening to the Diehards. Have a great weekend. I'm Anthony Pepe.